Everybody, this is Tiffany Carlson, and you are listening to No Free Rides, one of the coolest disability podcasts on the planet. This show is sponsored by EasyStand.com, the makers of some of the best standing frames around. So, hey everybody, thanks so much for tuning in. Today is October 31st, 2012, and I think this is about our 82nd show. Or around there. It's crazy. We keep doing these shows every month, and I love doing it. And if you're a regular listener, I want to thank you right now for tuning in and being a supporter of this podcast. I love hearing from you. So if you have any ideas for future interview subjects, let me know, because we're always looking for really awesome people with disabilities to share their stories. So today, actually, speaking of awesome people with stories to share, we have an incredible guest. I've known her for several years, and then I forgot about her because we only met on the internet. But in the interim, since I haven't really chatted with her online since 2005, her name is Mariam Perret. She's become a renowned mouth painter, and she's got a crazy story, a really great story about her life as an artist. And she's always been interested in art, and then she was became a quadriplegic at age 20, and everything kind of changed for her, of course, but she's become one of the best mouth painters and sexiest mouth painters you'll ever find, and she'll be joining us in a few minutes here, so definitely stay tuned for the unbelievable Mariam Perret. But first, everybody, today is, you know, like the last day of October, which means the election day, big ol' election day, November 6th is coming up. And that means here in the United States, we're going to be voting in a new president. And not as excited this election season versus 2008. I was so excited when Barack Obama was running, hoping he would win. And of course, we all know he won. And I was thrilled. And then, of course, 4 years have passed and my naivete has kind of course, thankfully, gone to the wayside. And now I see politics and the whole political arena a little bit clear. And, you know, I love Barack Obama still, but he's not a perfect candidate. But Mitt Romney is by far not a perfect candidate either. And I'm not going to get too political on you here. But definitely get out there and vote, whatever your beliefs are, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. Just make sure you vote for the issues that influence you. And you, if you have a disability, maybe you're a hardworking person and you don't need any government help, and that's great. But a lot of people do, and those benefits help a lot of people's lives. So, you know, it's tough. I've met a lot of people with disabilities that are actually really strongly Republican, and I can get toe-to-toe with these people, but I can see their point of view because I actually come from a Republican family. And it's interesting when your whole political beliefs kind of get upheaval here when you go through a disability like mine, and all of a sudden you're seeing a different perspective, and it's really a great eye-opener. So whatever you do, though, guys, make sure you vote. And if you have a disability, it's hard to get to the polls. Try to set up a ride. Make sure you're registered. Hopefully you live in a state where it's easy to do so. But whatever you do, just get out there and vote. It's one of those important things as a citizen of this country that all of us should do, all right? And here in Minnesota, actually, we have this crazy amendment. They want to change our constitution so it's illegal for gay people to get married in our state. You know, they've been doing this in all these different states throughout the country, and it's been, unfortunately, been passing. I am not a supporter of this amendment. So I'll be voting no on November 6th. And there is a Vikings player, Chris Cluey, actually, who I got to meet a few weeks ago, who supports this, gays getting married. His brother-in-law is gay. He's not gay, but his brother-in-law is gay, and he's a huge fervent supporter of gay marriage, and it's great because he's an NFLer, and you know how hard it is to be open about gay issues among all those men. So I love him, and I got to meet him a couple weeks ago because he's also interested in promoting spinal cord injury research, and he's involved in a documentary they're making here in Minnesota trying to get a bill passed so that drunk driving fines go to spinal cord injury research here in the state. So he spent a day in a wheelchair to bring attention to the issue, and if they filmed it, it's going to go in the documentary. So he's a great football player, and I have a little crush on him, but I think everybody does right now. But he's awesome, Chris Cluey. So if you haven't read my blog about it, you should check it out on my website. It was an unbelievable experience to meet someone who's so physically capable in a wheelchair, adamant about staying in that wheelchair all day long. He was really dedicated to stay in the wheelchair thing, and I was highly impressed. And another thing that's coming up that, you know, I am so excited about, I'm getting a new wheelchair on November 8th, and I'll be talking about it in November, too. I'm getting a brand new footrest that goes on a manual chair, and they're putting it on my power chair. And as a longtime quadriplegic, for me it's been 19 years, you come up with some really good tricks and ideas that you know can improve your wheelchair experience. And this is the first time in all these years I've put a manual wheelchair's footrest on a power chair, and I'm super excited about it. The people that created it, they're like, you're going to love it. I haven't seen it yet. I can't wait to see it. So I'm getting it on November the 8th. So I'll be posting photos and information about it when I get it so y'all can see what it's like. It's going to be really great for wearing high heel shoes. That's the main reason I'm doing it. But speaking of being paralyzed, you know, for a super long time, I've been paralyzed for 19 years, but our guest, Mariam, who's going to be joining us here in a second, has been paralyzed actually 16 years. So she's almost as long as been a quadriplegic as long as I have been. So we have a lot in common. So I'm so excited to have her on the show. So just one moment here, and we will be joined by the lovely Miss Mariam Perret. Hello, everybody. This is Tiffany Carlson, and I'm really excited because there's a really cool quadriplegic who lives not too far from where I am in Minneapolis. She lives in Chicago. Her name is Mariam Perret, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Mariam
Perret, and she is a mouth painter, and I've never done it myself, even though we're the same injury, so I'm really excited to learn all about what it's all about. So here we go. Mariam, how are you?
I'm good, Tiffany.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Now, if we hear a little bit of weird static now, I hope is that you or me?
I don't hear anything.
You don't? All right, awesome. Well, I'm hoping that it's just my phone, and hopefully it won't pick up too much here, but we're going to continue. If it starts being weird, we'll see what happens, okay?
Okay.
But anyway, so it's funny because, you know, I only heard, I know when did we first meet, or like, when did you first hear about me online? We just recently started talking about last week.
Actually, I knew about your blog years ago.
Okay.
And I think that we used to chat occasionally way back
after
like 2005.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember me from that.
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't, because I would have remembered it. Were you painting back then?
I was painting. I had just started with the MFPA, but I wasn't really known for it then. I was more just, I think we had met too, because I saw you in a Yahoo group or something, and I was desperately trying to know other female quads, because I don't know any other female quads. And
I know. Well, it's so hard when you're first heard, and I mean, I didn't realize right away for me that I needed to be around other female quads. It took me like a few years to kind of realize, like,
well,
God.
That's the thing. You get to the point where you start having quads. Questions and mm-hmm. you want to like share stories or like experiences or something, you
know,
beyond just, you know, other able-bodied friends or whoever you're surrounding yourself with. So and you know, back then, even when I first heard about you, you were real a big inspiration for me as well, because you were a beautiful quad woman lady doing your own thing.
Yeah.
And you know, kind of making things happen for yourself, you know, there's not a lot of role models out there. I mean, maybe there's more today, nowadays, like 2012 or whatever, but it seems like even in the earlier 2000s, there wasn't that many, like, people out there in the limelight that much. So it's good to see somebody doing it.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, I've talked to a lot of people on my website, so it's really cool that, I mean, where you started, what year were you injured then?
Well, I was injured in 96, actually, when I was 20.
Okay.
But, you know, then I finished college and everything and got my degrees and then started, you know, I was a designer for a while and had a small business and then really started with the fine arts.
So you really weren't doing the whole internet, I need to find another woman in a wheelchair to really communicate with until...
Yeah.
What took you so long to kind of, like, come to that realization?
I don't know. Well, I think it was always kind of happening for me, but I think that's when I was really getting into a lot of internet stuff.
Cool.
It was, you know, 2004, 2005.
Yeah. When I was first injured, I was, like, so bummed out because there wasn't, like, anyone in my initial rehab experience that was, like, in my age group that I could really relate to, and I kind of wished I had that, you know. Did you have anyone, like, near your age group at all, like, when you were in at your first rehab, you know, thing?
You know, only one other girl, mm-hmm. and her name was Angie Avance. And, you know, unfortunately, she passed away, just a few years after. You know, we went through rehab experience together and everything, and, you know, she passed away. And that was, like, a big loss for me because she was the person who...
What was her cause of death?
Pardon me?
What was her cause of death?
You know, they don't even really know. She went to sleep one night with a headache and didn't wake up in the morning.
Oh, jeez.
She had been really ill for a while, just, you know, kind of weak and stuff, and I think that maybe she just...
Gave up?
Yeah.
What level injury was she?
The same, C5, C6.
Yeah,
and she was younger than me. She was, like, 5 years younger than me, too. Oh. It was really sad. I mean, some people get very depressed.
Ugh, I know.
She had a lot of hardships, and I think that has a lot to do with, like, your will to live and the strength that you have.
It's so hard. You know, everyone deals with having a spinal cord injury. I mean, everyone goes through grief after a spinal cord injury, but some people go through it a lot more strongly, like, a lot hard. And I know some people that have been depressed solidly for years and years still. And I was lucky to get myself out of it, you know? But it's hard. And I, lately, too, I mean... tell me if you do this, do you find yourself ever going, you know, at least I'm not a higher injury, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
I do that. That's the little conversation I have with myself when I start feeling sorry for myself or start getting those feelings again, because they do come back. Mm-hmm. You know, every once in a while you'll get strong for a while and everything's going good, and then you get those tinges again of like, oh, God, this sucks. Oh, God, this
I know.
But then
know.
You tell yourself, okay. At least it's not as bad. It's not as bad as I think it is.
I know.
I have to remind myself what I do have, and it could be worse.
I know, and I do that too. And lately, I met this girl online, and I blogged about her, Caroline. She was like a fifth grader who's got a C1 injury, and she's on a ventilator, and she was hurt when she was 2 years old in a car accident. Her mom got in a car accident. And it's just like tragic, right? But I don't use her as a pity figure. I use her as making me just feel glad for the blessings that I have, and she has blessings too in her own way. And you know, we have to just be glad for what we have in this moment, because that's all we have is this moment, like right now, us speaking with each other. And it's the hard thing though is the memory, don't you think, of just having the memory of what a full functioning body is. And that's the hardest thing for me, is just getting that memory. I sometimes wish I didn't remember.
Yes,
you know,
it's true, because you do have something to compare it to. It's something to say, oh, I could have had this, or I had it all, or to miss that. But then it's you have a choice. You have a choice about how to feel about it. Mm-hmm. And if all you have is what you have now and you have to accept it, you have a choice of how you accept it. And you can let it bother you, but then if you let it bother you, gosh, it makes it so much worse, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. And if you let it bother you, you're going to feel like your skin's crawling and you want to get out of your body. Sometimes if I get too much into it, to let my mind get in that bad way of thinking, I'll start to feel almost claustrophobic in my own body, because I'll start feeling the weight of my paralyzed body pulling on me, and I almost feel like I'm suffocating. And it's so hard not being able to feel so much of my body. It's almost like I'm a ghost and I can remember what things were like, and I'm still, it's really can trip you out. And so you really have to like have your own tricks to kind of get yourself out of that way of thinking. And like for me, I love to read. I love flavors. I love food. I don't love to overeat, but I love, my taste buds are one of the few sensations, you know what I mean? That it's still exactly the same. And I try to, like, focus on those things, too, to kind of, get out of that. Because it's hard. It is so hard. And, you know...
And I think that's what art is for me. You know, it's the one thing I did before my injury that I can still do.
Art,
it's one thing that I can be completely expressive about, to be an individual about.
Yep. I love that. And were you always into art? Like, when did you, you're a mouth painter. I mean, did you paint with your hands before your injury a lot? Or how did...
Yeah, I painted since I was a little girl, all through high school. That was, like, what I knew I wanted to be. I wanted to be an artist even when I started college.
Cool.
With my choice of major. Oh. But then I got injured, like, 1 year after college started, and I was a fine art major.
Oh, you were.
So, yeah, that's kind of why I was like, well, I'm going to learn how to paint with my mouth.
Well, you know, and that's the interesting thing, because you're a C5-6 injury, which means you have some wrist movement, but, I mean, you have, you know, it wasn't the same, of course, being someone that could use the paintbrush in your hand the way you used to be able to. And is that why you decided to use your mouth, because you could just have that much direct control?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One reason is because I used to be right-handed, and now my left hand is stronger. My right hand, I don't have tenodesis in.
Oh.
It's, like, really weird. I have this, like, I'm C5, C6, but my right hand, for some reason, was a little bit more infected. I don't know why, and the doctors really don't know why. You know how nerves, weird, you know, you get... But yet I can feel part of the inside of my left knee. I don't know.
Oh, it's so, weird, yeah.
Trying to use my left hand, like with things strapped to my hand, it was shaky, and I just get tired, and it would hurt. But it's like if you put a paintbrush in your mouth, your neck is stable. You're like centered.
Yeah.
So it's like easy to make straight lines, and I just felt like I had more control. So that's why I chose to... mouth paint instead of like
awesome.
I do know some quads who paint with their hands.
Yeah.
But I just feel like it, I have more control with my
that's
mouth.
Awesome. And with your mouth, do you feel like how do you get over like not getting tired with your jaw getting clenched and stuff?
Well, you don't clench your jaw. You just gently
really
relax your mouth. Just put the paintbrush between your teeth and just relax your mouth. You know, I'm not pushing really hard.
Okay.
Unless I'm doing like a great big canvas or trying to, you know, sometimes I'll hurt myself if I'm trying to like
yeah.
prime a 30-inch canvas myself, but now I have assistance for that. So.
What kind of paintbrushes? Are they wooden handled or?
Yeah, I usually use wooden handled ones.
And so,
I have some mouth sticks, which are like, you know, I'm sure you've seen them. They're like, they're shaped like the jaw of your mouth.
Yeah.
I do use some of those, but most of the time I'm too busy to be, and I switch too many paintbrushes, so I just stick the paintbrushes straight in my mouth.
That's cool.
But I do have some that are, like, actually fitted for my mouth.
Wow. And it's, like, so it's a technique, basically. Did you have to learn the hard way when you started doing it, or did it just come naturally to you?
It didn't necessarily come naturally. It was easier than trying with my hands, like I said, but it was a whole new school of trying to learn how to do something. It's like if you can imagine like an able-bodied person trying to write their name with their foot, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a different limb. It's a different, it's a whole different part of your body. But interesting enough, you know, I tell people this and they're usually amazed that it still comes from within you. Like your technique and your knowledge and what you're trying to create still comes within you, because even my handwriting with my mouth is the same as the handwriting with my hand.
Oh, really? Cool.
So it's somewhere connected in your brain, so you're still trying to make those same gestures.
Oh, weird.
Them.
Yeah. So how do you get over that, though? Like, does it throw you
practice.
Off?
Practice.
Okay.
I mean, the way I paint now is just so much better than it was when I started. Everything I created when I first started mouth painting looked like a three-year-old did it.
Wow.
You know, like stick figures and, you know, rainbows and stars. And, you know, now I can paint a three-dimensional cherry that, you know, looks realistic.
When did you finally paint a first painting that you really loved? How long did it take for you to get to that point where you were like, this is awesome, I'm really good?
Oh, goodness, I don't know if I've ever really said that.
No?
I can say, though, that maybe 3 years after my injury, when I really started to stop to do the stick figures, and I painted a Bob Marley in watercolor.
Ooh.
Bob Marley holding a guitar.
That's awesome.
And I was like, wow, this kind of looks like Bob Marley. It was the first time I actually was like, you know what, I'm going to be able to get better at painting, so I'm going to keep at it.
I love that. So here's what we're going
to
do.
It's a lifelong process. I think I can't wait to see how good I'm going to be 20 years from now. You know, I'll hopefully be 10 times better.
I love that. So after you got injured, when did you go straight back into college to finish your degree?
I did. Maybe like after maybe a year and a half. I spent some time being very, very depressed. I think as we all do when we get home and out of rehab for a while and out of the safety net of the wonderful rehab experience that makes you feel all positive and wonderful. And you're home, and you get depressed for a while. But after that, yes, I did go back to college and started school and got right back into, I was doing a double major, fine art and design.
Okay. And did you do a lot of adaptations and other art, like did you like clay and stuff, or did you just stick with painting?
Well, you have to go through basically all the classes, you know, so you have to go through the life drawing class.
Oh,
you have to go through the sculpture class in order to get a degree.
That's awesome. It's
like, yeah. Teachers were nice. They allowed me to do some adaptive projects or use assistance, but basically all the art that I created came through my inspiration. Like, I did make sculptures that other people actually sanded and chiseled for me, but I basically told them where to do every little thing, kind of directed them through it. So it's like I made art through the hands of other people.
Oh, and that is so cool, and the professors were so awesome to kind of adjust it to your needs like that, too. What school did you end up going to, or what school, which was it?
Well, I went to College of DuPage and then Benedictine University.
Awesome. And so what year did you graduate?
Technically, it was my first degree. I think it was 2005, but I went to school and I got 2 degrees, so I was in college for like 9 years.
Oh, that's awesome.
I just kept getting, you know, I have a couple of associates as well, and went back for web design.
Web design, too. So you're just kind of doing all different types of art forms, right? And I really love your YouTube page because you're doing, like, stop motion kind of, or what's this video, like, art, like, what's it called, media? What's the actual terminology for it?
Oh, so you mean the multimedia?
Yes. So yeah, I love, is this the other kind of art you're doing other than painting right now?
Yeah, because I have a design background and I always loved animation. And for a long time, I couldn't make a living off of my fine art, so I was doing design, and I was creating websites for people, you know, to make money.
Cool.
So, you know, the painting kind of started being lucrative for me. And it's just that I'm a fan of all kinds of mediums, and being disabled, I'm very fond of technology because it just opens up a whole new world of accessibility, you know. I can edit video, I can design things using my computer, Photoshop, all kinds of things, so I love that.
So what's the medium that you're actually doing right now? I forget the actual name of it. Do you have a couple of videos of it on your YouTube page?
I don't know what you mean of the medium. Do you mean the medium that I'm painting with?
No, the arts, the actual, whatever you call, not painting, but the other thing that you're doing on there. And people can click play and watch it, and it's really cool. And it's a different type of thing that you've made for people to look at in terms of, like, being inspired.
I think you just mean the mixed media or the multimedia.
Yeah. What's the actual...
I use animation and stop motion.
Yeah, so you're basically, you're doing stop motion stuff, basically.
Yeah, well, with my painting, I do the time lapse. I record myself painting so that people can see the process of my mouth painting being created.
Yeah.
But I also do the actual stop motion animation where I'm manipulating objects, like the sandwich one. I don't know if you've seen
Yes.
You can see a sandwich being created, and it's just made of all these weird kind of like styrofoam and toothpaste and paper.
Oh, the cherry blossom one. Like, that's crazy. So basically, it's like all these like little bobby pins, and like you put things together, and then they create a design, basically, right?
Yes, you just kind of like take pictures while you're moving them, and then when you edit it all together, it looks like it's animated.
It's beautiful. It's like totally... what a strange way to kind of... I love artists. I never use that side of my brain. I wouldn't even know how to start creating something like that. That's beautiful. How do you come up with these ideas?
Sometimes it's boredom, and sometimes we just want to do something, and, you know, I like just making things, and I'll see what supplies I have, and I'll be like, I'm going to make something out of these bobby pins that have been sitting on my desk for weeks, and I haven't put them away.
And they're like, for everybody out there listening, they're like these 30-minute little video vignettes. Is that what you would call it?
Oh, yeah, with 30-second, yeah.
I mean, sorry, a 30-second video vignette. And basically, the purpose is just because it's beautiful and it's art. So it's interesting to me that art now, well, it's always been kind of been used in an artistic form, but this is, like, really cool. And I that's why I never was taught how to do this kind of stuff in my basic art classes when I was in college. Splicing together stuff like this and making them seem like there's something else, like I think it's really cool. And did you always do this kind of thing, or are you getting bored with painting?
No, I've always kind of made things out of things.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of like my creative process. I do like making things.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of goes along with, and you said you don't have an artistic side. I beg to differ, because I think fashion is very related to art.
Yeah.
And it's like matching of colors, finding aesthetics that are pleasing.
Right,
textures,
right.
And you know, you did a webcast about liking to tear up your clothes and make new things out of them.
Right,
it's kind of
true.
This feeling you get. You're creating something and using your creative side to be like, what can I make out of this?
Yeah, I love it. And do you find it to be like a really therapeutic thing too for you? Like when you're creating art, like do you feel like it's like your zen place as well?
I do. I've worked out some pretty heavy issues emotionally through art. Like I did a series about, things that were related to gun violence. I don't know if you know, but I'm a victim of gun violence.
Okay, yeah.
But how my injury, yes.
Wow, I didn't know that, but we don't need to go into that. That's profound.
No, but we don't have to go into it, but I did paintings depicting, like, the spinal cord, and, you know, I did a Statue of Liberty instead of holding up a torch. She had a gun in her hand, and the flag in the background, you know, so like through painting, like you asked me if it was therapeutic.
Yeah,
you know, I kind of worked out some issues by painting that and kind of came to a point of acceptance and understanding. And then it felt like I was, you know, maybe making awareness around me by producing these paintings
I
then showed to the public kind of as biographical, you know.
Do you ever find like people just want to stare at you when you're out in public? If you ever do like painting, like, you know what I mean? Like, do you ever do public painting?
Only a few times.
Okay.
And usually, if I do it, it's because I do want people to watch.
Okay. That would be intense. Would you ever feel like nervous though, like doing that in public?
Yeah, it's weird being watched.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if I could do that. Like, this is kind of off topic. It's not really related to art, but. How do you deal with just people staring in general when you're out and about?
You know what? It's been so many years now. I've been injured for 16 years now, and
yeah.
I think that I kind of am a little used to it now.
But
I do kind of feel, I always feel the eyes on me, say, like I walk into a bar or a club or a restaurant.
Yeah.
Well, see, I say walk into a, you know.
I know. I know.
I go into some kind of place. I do feel, I always feel like, oh my goodness, everybody just turned and looked at me.
I know, yeah.
Because I'm the girl in the wheelchair. Oh, great. But then I feel it and then I let it go and I try not to let it bother me.
Good. What do you, if some kid's staring, do you have any good little things you say to kids if you're out or things that they ask what happened to you?
You know, I've only really had, I've had a couple good experiences with kids. I haven't had too many bad experiences, but I do, if kids stare, I always, and it's a thing I've always done, I always try to smile at them really big.
That's what I do, too.
Hey, I caught you staring, ha-ha, you know. But the only bad experiences I've had with children have kind of had to do with their parents. Like I'm having an interaction with a child who's maybe staring at me because they're interested in my wheelchair. They think it's neat.
Right.
And then the parent will go and, like, snatch them. Oh, it's bad. Stay away from her.
I know. I hate that.
Don't you? I'm like, that just put a really bad impression on your child.
I know. It happens all the time to me, too. It's like, you want to say something to the parent at that point, but it's kind of like, how do you say it gracefully or without seeming like you're stepping out of line or something? But it's disappointing. But, you know, do you ever have any, like, strange, have you ever had any, like, weirdo? I feel like the wheelchair is a weirdo magnet. Do you agree with me on that?
Oh, my God, yeah. I think so, too.
And you live in a pretty big city, so, I go out by myself a lot. You know, I have a boyfriend and stuff, but I have to go out a lot and do a lot of shit on my own and errands and whatnot. And I'm always just paranoid because there's always going to be someone that's going to come up to me and do something weird. Does that happen to you, too?
Yeah, all the time. all the time. It's like people think that just because you're in a wheelchair, it's an invitation to, like, oh, I'm going to sit next to you and tell you my sob story because you're in a wheelchair, so you obviously want to hear my sob story.
Oh, I know.
Or I'm going to just touch you for no apparent reason.
Yesterday, I was getting
And also with guys think, it's like when I'm out and about, it's like, I don't know if it's because they think, oh, this chick must have lower standards because she's in a wheelchair.
Yes.
If any idiot thinks they can come and talk to you.
Oh, they do. I know. And
get on you or be inappropriate to you.
Yeah. It gets really old after a while, don't you think?
Yes.
It gets real old. I'm to the point where when a guy thinks just because I'm in a wheelchair, I'll give him the time of day, I have this death stare that I've kind of got down to a science, and I just stare him down like a total bitch hawk, and he doesn't know what to do at that point. It's pretty great, but
only if they're being rude or inappropriate or crossing the line.
Oh no! Oh, of course, but you can't.
There are some very nice people who approach me, which I'm very open to.
Oh no! There's always beautiful, nice people, but it's just the occurrence of weird. There's something about attracting those people that's just strange to me in a wheelchair. It wasn't really something I was prepared for, and it's always fun to talk to people about. And no, of course we're gonna find great people too. We always do, you know. But just being in Chicago, I just bet you have some funny stories. That's what I was trying to ask.
Well, do you ever get the people who, and maybe this bothers me more, is the people who within 2 seconds of talking to you or meeting you. And it's a lot of times it's men, weird men.
Yeah.
Will be like, so, can you have babies? Or so, what can you feel?
Oh.
Or how do you use the bathroom?
No guy has the balls to ask me that because I look like a, you know what, most of the time when they, you should see me in person. I'm very intimidating. I look really, I always try to look fierce. And so, but back in the day when I'm in my mid-20s and I would go out to clubs a lot when I was a big drinker. And yeah, guys would go to that. That's the first thing. They're like, oh, so can you feel everything? Or can you still have sex?
Yeah.
Or they just want to know, can you still have sex?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can still have sex. But, you know, I'm not going to have sex with you because I don't care how big your know-what is. It's probably not going to make me feel any different. So go away. Just go away. It's really powerful.
Out there that are mad, don't do that to you. Women in wheelchairs because we don't like it.
Oh, my God.
FYI. It's not a turn-on.
Not a turn-on. Oh, man. It gets really frustrating when people assume less than of you or, you know, guys assume that you'll settle. It gets really old after, you know, people always assuming less than. So, you know, I feel like, you know, that's our roles in our lives, don't you think? We're just meant to kind of change stereotypes all the time, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think sometimes that it's maybe a duty that we've been given. Maybe we didn't want that, but
yeah.
Since we are, I think you as well, a vocal person, and, you know, I like to set as many people straight as possible that I can in a positive way,
yeah.
Rather than, you know, let them go on making the mistakes that they do or, you know, to have a good impression.
Yeah, and that's so important because first impressions last forever. And, you know, like, you just want to try to be the nice person as much as possible. And you know, when you have an opportunity to kind of tell someone your story in a good way, I like to do that, too. And, like, someone will go, oh, I feel bad for you. And I'll say, don't feel bad for me. I was dead for 3 minutes. I'm blessed to be here. And you should, and they'll look at me and they won't know what to say. But I feel like this is what I live for in this little moment right here. Because it's changing the way someone's perception is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's really hard, though. But how's your health been all these 16 years? Been pretty healthy?
You know, lately I'm very healthy.
Yeah.
I've had my bouts of pneumonia. I had, you know, thank goodness I haven't had, like, any sores. Like, I know a lot of people have had sores. But, you know, I've had maybe just a few incidences of maybe some breakdown, but nothing bad. Yeah, and I think the worst thing that's happened to me over the 16 years is a few bouts of pneumonia where
scary.
I had to be re-raked and got, you know, it's respiratory illness.
Oh, it's so scary.
You know, with spinal cord injury, people really have to be careful of. But
oh, they do.
I just know I'm real healthy now.
That's awesome. And with the pneumonia, was it a bad cold? Just for people out there, just some, like, warning signs, because I got it 2 years ago for my first time being paralyzed, and was it a cold that you didn't treat and you let it kind of get too bad?
Well, it's one of those things, Tiffany, like not being able to cough as a quad, not being able to cough hard.
Okay,
so. All that phlegm settles in your lungs.
Yep.
It's like liquid in your lungs, and that's kind of what turns it.
Oh, yeah.
So if you are a quad or a para and you do get a cold that lingers and lingers,
yep.
You should go to the doctor.
Yeah, after about a week, they say, right?
Pardon me?
It's about a week, they say, right? If your cold is around for about a week.
Yeah.
That's what my doctors tell me. If you have your cold for after 7 days and it still hasn't changed, you should call your doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was amazed to find out that that's the number one cause of death for spinal cord injury is respiratory illness.
It's so scary. How did you cough? Did you have a trick?
Well, I cough now doing cough assists, or I like lean forward and shake myself, but sometimes when you have a really bad cold, even that's not good enough.
I know.
So when I did have pneumonia, I did have to be trached so they could, suction me again. And that was years back. I think that was like 2004 the last time that happened.
Okay.
But you know what? They have this amazing thing now.
Yeah, yeah.
Called the pneumonia shot.
What?
It's like a vaccine.
Oh. Yeah.
And you only need it like every once every 10 years. And ever since I've had the pneumonia vaccine, I have not had pneumonia again.
Wow. Seriously. Okay, I think...
After having it every single year for like 3 or 4 years.
So
I had the shot and never had it again.
That's amazing. So
it's as important as the flu shot.
Okay. That's good to know, everyone out there listening. I think I did get it a couple years ago when I had pneumonia. I was hospitalized for a week, and they put me on a pummeling machine. They wrapped me in like this rubber thing and turned the on button on and vibrated me for 20 minutes, like 5 times a day.
Yeah.
It was a bit strange, but it worked enough. I didn't die. It's so scary having the wanting to cough and not being able to. Ugh, so scary.
Well,
so are you into healthy eating? Being an artist, I want to assume that you're one of those healthy eating people as well. Am I right or wrong?
I'm not a vegetarian, but I do like to eat my veggies.
That's
and
good.
My Adwalas and my omega-3 fish oil.
Omega-3 fish oil. So you're beautiful. You look great. Your skin is beautiful. And you're pretty girly, right? Do you dress pretty feminine most days?
More or less. I'm into function because I paint a lot and I don't want to get dirty on my studio days. But
yeah.
When I do dress up, I like to dress up.
So what are some of your favorite, in your closet, if we were in your closet right now and you could show us some of your favorite looks that you love, that you know will work good for you because of the chair and everything? What do you love? Some tips.
On a day-to-day basis, I'm a big jeans kind of person.
What kind of jeans do you like?
I love, because I'm so tall, I'm 5'11".
Oh, my gosh.
So I always get the extra length in my jeans, so I love the Gap jeans and the Banana Republic jeans.
Okay.
The skinny ones.
Really?
But I do love opportunities to dress kind of a little wild. Like, I was a little bit of a new waiver in high school.
Really?
So I have tendencies to kind of go back to that. Like, whenever I have an art opening or, like today is Halloween, for instance.
Yes, happy Halloween.
I like to pull out the little bit of a weird thing. Like, I didn't dress up in a costume today, but I do have, like, a plaid short skirt taffeta, like, punk rock.
What?
Strapless little dress that's red plaid. and it looks a little punk rock. I like to wear that, or I'll wear something like that at an art opening or something.
Sexy.
I love things with stuff on the shoulders.
Yep.
So if I have sweaters that are like crazy shoulder stuff, I don't know.
So do you wear a lot of dresses, or do you find yourself in pants most of the time?
You know, because I have a leg bag, mm-hmm. I tend to wear pants most of the time.
Yep, yep.
I do will make accommodations for, like, weddings or, a formal event where I will, hide my leg bag and so I can wear skirts and tights.
Right, right.
But on a day-to-day basis, I tend to just do the pants.
All right. That's all. I mean, I was... And that I used to do pants all the time too before I had when I used to like beg as well, and then I had my surgery, in 05. I had bladder surgery. I think we were talking about this on Facebook. Do you want to talk about it a little on here? Because I don't mind. You know, I think people out there with females with spinal cord injuries, you know, they've heard about this. There's different other options, you know, like I had this.
What is that called? The Mitro?
It's called the Mitrofenov, which it's a really long word named after a guy that invented it. He's like this German doctor, Dr. Mitrofenov. And basically, I mean, I didn't even want to do the surgery because when I first heard about it, I was like, hell no, I'm not putting a hole in my belly button to go to the bathroom. But I was using the Foley catheter like you are for, gosh, 12 years. And then all of a sudden, my bladder just was like, yeah, we don't like this anymore. And I started voiding around the balloon. My doctor's like, I don't know what's going on. And so I was like, well, I can't live like this. So my only other option was getting a super pubic with the bag or finally taking the big dive and getting the Mitrofenov surgery, which was a little bit more, you know, complicated because, you know, you get the leg bag with the super pubic attached to you. All they got to do, that's like an hour surgery and you can leave the next day. But the Mitrofenov for me, my bladder was so little from using a leg bag for so long that they had to make my bladder bigger, which they used part of your lower intestine. They cut out some of the skin and then they use that and they make your bladder bigger. So they have to close off your intestine. So they have to, it takes like 4 days for them to heal after the surgery. So you can't, they have a feeding tube in you for 4 days. That's the gross part. But for some people, they don't need to get their bladder made enlarged. All they need then is just the stoma and the little conduit in their belly button kind of put in there to get to the bladder. So anyways, long story short, the surgery was successful, and I got it in 2005, and I was in the hospital for like a week, and it was not easy, because I was like, the first few days, I was a wreck, because it was like, just put me back under, I don't want to be awake, because I couldn't eat, and it was really just...
You're miserable.
It was miserable. It was miserable, and then finally, you know, I got better after about day five, and I got to go home. And after about a month of it healing, they took out the leg bag because I had to use a leg bag for the month. And then I got to use the stoma for the first time in my belly button. And I've loved it since then because I no longer have to have the big talk with boyfriends and tell them about my leg bag. I don't have to worry about clothes. The only thing I hate. Yeah. The only
and
thing.
Those are the things that kind of make it look. You know, interesting to me is because, one, I won't have to have the leg bag all the time. Mm-hmm. As easy as it is, mm-hmm. it opens up fashion, like, completely.
Yeah, I wear leggings all the time now, leggings and skirts and boots. Like
even cute shoes, like, I can't wear boots because of the leg bag.
That sucks. You need to get the surgery. You're a tough chick. You can go through the 4 days. Believe me, it's worth it, and I didn't want to do it, but, you know, the only thing is, like,
self-cath, is that right?
You self-cath, yep. I keep a Mountain Dew bottle on me in my little bladder purse, and then when I feel a little dysreflexic, I know I gotta go to the bathroom, so I whip out my Mountain Dew bottle, and I use a Mountain Dew bottle, because if I'm out in the go in my van, I have to do it. If I have to put pee in there, no one can tell it's pee, because it's a Mountain Dew bottle. I got that trick from my friend Kelly Giannatasio, girl, she's out there, she's paralyzed, she had the surgery before I did, and gave me the tip. So... it's a good tip. And so, yeah, so then you just put the bottle between your legs, lift up your shirt. Usually I got to pull my shirt over my boob because my boobs are big. I got to pull my shirt up so my shirt stays up. And then I just poke, you know, usually I always like to wipe my belly button clean. And my belly button, if you look at it, you wouldn't even tell. You have to, like, the hole is really nice, and they did a really good job. And then you just put you put the catheter in about 5 inches, and then it starts to come out, and then wait. And then you take it out and you're done. That's it. And, you know, it's
super... And it doesn't leak from the stoma?
No, not at all. None. It never has leaked through my stoma once. If anything, it's leaked through below, through my urethra, which I still have in case there's an emergency. And your doctor should always leave it open no matter what. And so, yeah, if, like, I've gotten really drunk some nights and forgotten to, like, maybe pee on time. And so the worst thing that will happen is that I'll pee through my urethra. Oopsies. No big deal. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So no, it's really great.
So attractive. I mean, I might wait until I, like, have some kind of problem with the catheter and then do it.
Okay.
But yeah, because nobody wants to do surgery. It's hard to, like, force yourself to do surgery.
No, it's not easy. I know. No one wants to leave their house and have to go to a hospital for all those days. You know, but it's so great for that. I love it. I love it. I love it. So anyways, but yeah, you know, it's something to think about. And, you know, my doctor here at Abbott Northwestern in Minneapolis, he's really good. I don't know. I'm sure there's a doctor in Chicago that could do it for you too. But, you know, and I'm sure your insurance would cover it. But anyways, but, you know, speaking of catheters and, you know, I brought up the boys issue. And, let's talk about dating. You know, we have about 5-10 minutes left on the show here. Let's talk about the juicy stuff. And what's your dating life been like since, seriously.
I feel like I've been rather fortunate. When I was first injured, I used to cry every day because one of the first things because as a young girl, I was like, nobody's going to love me. I'm never going to have a boyfriend. It was a huge deal. I was depressed about it. But I was quite amazed how fortunate I was to find people open-minded enough. And if you're a good person anyway, I think you're going to attract people anyway.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm social and everything, so I've been fortunate enough to have had good experiences with boyfriends over the years. And I'm in a long-term committed relationship now, and I'm really happy. And
how long have you guys been together?
This boyfriend, I've been together with him for, a little over 2 years now.
Hey, that's the same with my boyfriend.
Yay!
Yeah, we started dating in September of 2 years ago. Almost.
Really? Okay, I think we were like June.
Oh. So, you know, I do some dating column writing stuff online with people with disabilities, and they always ask me, you know, Tiffany, how do I meet someone? And I always tell, hey, go online and meet someone, but sounds like maybe you didn't go online to meet guys, right?
No, you know what, though? I met probably half of the boyfriends I've had over the past 16 years online. I think it's a great way to meet people.
Oh, that's great.
It's a great way to get to know people for a long time before jumping into anything and really talking to people. I think it's a great way to meet guys.
So cool. So I was going to say I'm impressed. I was assuming you're meeting guys in the art world or whatever. But so which sites?
Have that too.
Yeah. Well, what do you like? Do you have favorite sites? You don't have to, you can name a few of them. You don't have to tell us your ultimate favorite so guys aren't going to go out there looking for you. But
you know, it hasn't even been like that, like necessarily a site.
Really?
It's more just been like,
like Facebook?
Oh my goodness, how did I meet? I mean, I just, maybe just like even YouTube. I met one of my boyfriends on YouTube.
Are you kidding me?
On YouTube and a musician, and we just got to be friends. We were friends for 3 years, and we did a long distance thing.
Wow.
Where we got together, and then he moved to where I lived, and we were together for 3 years.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. So
And then I dated one of my first boyfriends was my physical therapist.
What? That's so illegal.
Well, it was after I was in pain.
Oh, good. That's like a really sexy story waiting to be written or something.
It was so good for my first boyfriend though because he was a person who was already familiar with disability and already knew how to do things like transfer me.
Yes.
And
yes.
Knew about my body in certain ways I didn't have to explain, because that's one of the hardest things about starting to date when you're a person with spinal cord injury or disability is feeling like you have to make somebody else comfortable with all your little things.
Oh, I know it. And then you're always worried they're not going to be comfortable around it, too, you know?
Yeah.
I've
had those conversations.
Well, that's so, and you know, what it sounded like, though, since you've been really successful at dating guys, have you ever maybe met, you know, like some really jerk guys, and how did you deal with that?
Oh, my goodness, you know,
I mean, you can't let them beat you down, right? You can't let the bad guys beat you down, right?
Oh, no, you can't. Or you just stay away from those people. And
yeah.
You got to watch out for the weirdos, too, especially online.
Oh, God, don't even get me started.
Motives, or maybe they're not into a relationship. Maybe it's just sexual or some kind of weird thing. And you do have to be aware that that's out there.
Yeah, you do. You got to be real careful.
Especially online.
You got to be careful, don't you agree? Like, you know, you just got to, you just got to make sure, be a little bit old-fashioned, make the guy work for it, you know? Make him prove that he wants more than just sex, right?
Right.
Right. Do you have any dreams of getting married one day?
If it happens, it happens, that's fine. But, you know, I'm not a person who, it has to happen for my happiness.
Right. That's good. That's cool. How about, do you want to have babies at all? Are you one of those quads that's like, I must have children?
You You know what? I don't think I do. And no. I don't know how it would be if I was able-bodied. Maybe I would have children. But mm-hmm. I feel like it's such a big responsibility, and I'm a little bit selfish. And
right.
I have my own agenda with my art and my career.
Yeah.
I'm going to live vicariously through my friends and my family and Auntie Ever, and, you know, help raise the other children that people are having.
I think I'm going to do the same thing. Are you ever worried, though, that you might, you know, get a little bit older and regret that decision?
You know, no.
Yeah.
I don't. I already regret not having, feeling like I have the choice completely.
Yeah.
Like, I already feel a little bit like my choice is made for me. Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't want to have a baby that I couldn't care for entirely.
I know. I feel the same way. And a lot of women don't seem to care, but and they do fabulous jobs with their helps. And but I would want to do everything myself, you know.
That's, yeah, me too.
Yeah, it's tough, though. You know, I feel like with the spinal cord injury, you kind of get used to getting over, like, those things. Like, that's just not going to be for me in this lifetime, you know. I don't know. Do you believe in past lives?
Not necessarily, no.
Do you have, this is kind of a deep question, but do you believe your accident happened for a reason?
Oh, even that, no. I tend to believe in chaos and that this world is maybe doesn't have a lot of mercy and things happen and bad things happen to good people.
Yeah.
So I don't believe in, like, destiny like that, but I do believe in making the best out of what you have. And maybe things wouldn't have been good if this had not happened to me,
right.
And finding the benefits of this having happened to me, because I'll tell you one thing, I am probably a much more patient person,
yeah.
And understanding person now than
yeah.
perhaps I would have been if yeah. this had not happened to me.
Oh, for sure. I love it. Me too.
I do believe in that.
I believe that's the case for a lot of people. And so let's for people out there who've enjoyed this podcast and now want to probably, you know, view your artwork, where can they check out your stuff online?
Well, I'm also a member of the MFPA, which is the Mouth and Foot Painting Artists Association, so I can be found at mfpausa.com and my own website. I would love it if anyone would stop by and say hi, send me a message from www.mariamparee.com, and that's spelled MARIAMPARE, all one word, .com. But Tiffany, if we just have a minute, I
yes.
would like to just have a little shout-out really quick
yeah.
for a couple of art shows that we're throwing, and
oh.
we're looking for artists with spinal cord injury. You don't just have to be a mouth painter. You
yes.
can make art of any kind. I'm getting together with Rebecca Torres,
yeah.
who I know that you know.
Yes.
Backbones Organization, yes. And we're throwing an art event
oh,
in 2013, sometime at the beginning of summer. And right now we're putting out the call for artists. We're looking for artists with spinal cord injury.
I love it.
Be in our art show. So if you are an artist and would like to be in an art show, even if you're just a beginning artist, or if you're an established artist, please contact me.
Okay.
And we can see if we can put you in the art show.
So, and it doesn't matter if they're not in the area, because it's going to be an online art show and an in-person art show, right?
Well, we're not so sure. If you're not in the area, we are working
okay.
Through shipping. But
okay.
it is very possible.
So that's awesome. So you'll be able to... So if someone lives far away, they could possibly have their art there still, if they could ship it out there, and you would still maybe show it, huh?
Yes.
That's so cool.
Thank you.
So when is when's the deadline for that?
Well, we haven't set a deadline, but it's probably going to be the beginning of summer. So we have
okay.
all spring.
Wow. Well, there's a lot of artists out there that probably will want to get involved. For sure.
Yes, or even if you don't have a piece yet, there's plenty of time to create a piece mm-hmm. for the show. And contact either Backbones or me through my website.
Awesome. Okay, this is great. Maybe I'll submit something.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah. I used to sketch around the fire when I was 13. I was really good at charcoal sketches of hunters.
Really? I would love to see that.
Yeah, maybe I'll see if I can find one from my mom up in her attic. That would be fun. I would like to...
Sketching fashion designs. Do you ever do that?
No. I don't know. I never did. I guess I'm afraid. I'm afraid of my hands, Mariam. You got to show me how to use my mouth. All right. You've been so great. It was so great talking to you and everything. And I feel bad that I didn't remember meeting you back in the day. But that's because, you know, I've met a lot of people online. And it's just really great to talk to you. And you're doing some beautiful artwork. And if anyone out there hasn't seen Mariam's beautiful work, you need to see it. It's really, 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 really awesome. All right.
Well, thank you for saying so.
Yeah, really. Yeah. So thank you.
And thank you for having me.
Yep, have a happy Halloween, and I will see you online, okay?
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye.